Welcome to the Financial Management Magazine podcast series, a service of the Association of International Certified Professional Accountants. This series features discussions with chartered global management accountants and other experts about the topics, trends and technologies that are transforming the accounting profession.
How can companies find success beyond simply protecting shareholder value? How can they take a multi-stakeholder approach that focuses on customers, suppliers, and society? In this FM Magazine podcast, Senior Editor Oliver Rowe discusses that topic and more with SEMA President Nick Jackson. Here's Oliver.
Welcome, Nick.
Thank you, Oliver.
Many members will know you already, but for those who don't, perhaps you could describe your SEMA journey so far.
Well, I guess it's fair to say that I've had quite a wide-ranging and varied career. I've worked in both the public and the private sectors. I've had operational financial leadership roles with the likes of Ministry of Justice and Ofsted, which is the schools and colleges regulator in the UK. But also as a management consultant of nearly 15 years, I got to work across a very broad range of industries. However, I'd say there are two constants that I've always had as a focus. First is on financial and performance management as a theme. And the second allied to that is having a strong sense of public service. In terms of my SEMA career, well, to be frank, as with the majority of our members, I had little to do directly with SEMA once I qualified back in 1992. I was busy pursuing my career. However, my path crossed with SEMA's then Chief Executive Officer around 2007 when I was invited to lead an advisory group to the UK Treasury on performance management in government. And when in 2009, I subsequently joined the Treasury to help drive improvements in financial management across the civil service and to increase the professionalism of the finance function, I was invited as a co-optee to join SEMA's council. I found my time on council to be particularly stimulating, especially more recently as we've faced up to the challenges that are arising from things like the digital revolution, the changing requirements from employers, and the different expectations that new generations have around what it means to be a management accountant, or indeed what it means to study for a professional qualification. And it's also been great more recently, again, to share experiences with my colleagues on council, but increasingly with those drawn from the AICPA and working through the association that we have with our American colleagues. This is really helping to bring a truly global perspective to what we do, and to do so collectively with a common sense of purpose around continual improvement for the profession as a whole. And through that, to ensure that we retain our focus on the trust that is placed in us by the public at large.
Thank you. And the theme for your year as SEMA President is responsible financial leadership. What do you mean by that, and why is it timely for this crisis period?
So for me, in shorthand, I would describe this as being about changing the perspective of financial leaders from a shareholder perspective to a broader stakeholder perspective. You know, we are long used to, the primary responsibility being shareholder value and protecting that. And I don't think that goes away, but I do think that increasingly, if we are looking to the long-term sustainability of organizational performance, then we need a broader range of perspectives, and we need to embrace those, because only through that will we have, develop the kind of trust that we as a profession need to maintain with our public, with our regulators, with our customers, our suppliers, our employees, etc. Current crisis has really brought some of this to the fore. We are seeing, perfectly profitable businesses that are facing insolvency due to that short-term immediate cash flow hit. And as we're going through the crisis, we're now seeing real restrictions on operational capacity in some critical industries as they comply with the requirements of public health in terms of their ability to operate effectively. This has required, I think, other businesses that have been better placed to think more holistically about their relationship with their customers, with their suppliers, and with wider societies. And in that way, we are seeing organizations introduce payment holidays for strategically important customers, flexing payment terms for suppliers, ensuring prompt repayment credit notes where services cannot be delivered. And it's increasingly visible, those who are providing that flexibility and those who aren't. I use that merely as a demonstration of what I would say is responsible finance leadership, i.e. those who are behaving in that way, who are trying to be flexible, recognizing that they are part of a broader ecosystem and it's not just about how they themselves operate. Those are the organizations, the leaders of those organizations are the ones who are likely to be more successful going forwards.
And financial institutions are seeing an accelerating trend towards ESG investment. Within that context, how should businesses, perhaps still in survival mode, look to the long term?
Well, a very, very timely question, as the Sunday Times on the 9th of August is running a supplement on this very subject, dedicated to the trend that we're seeing in institutional investments around comparing those funds that were following more of this ESG, you know, the environmental, social, or societal and governance perspectives. Those organizations that invest against those that kind of ethical stance were clearly outperforming other funds. I think that reflects not just good business sense, but I think reflects changes in wider society that is looking for companies that move from words to actually demonstrating how they are adopting more ethical practices. An example here would be, you know, we're seeing supply chains, increasingly important that supply chains are able to demonstrate that their sourcing is from sustainable sources, that they're paying their employees a fair wage, that they're working to help improve the well-being of the communities within which they work. So for me, this is really about, as we're coming out of COVID, as we're thinking about the new planning horizon, which is now no longer a 5 to 10 year planning horizon, but increasingly a 12 to 18 month horizon, because COVID has truncated those planning timescales. Those businesses will benefit much more if they're factoring into their planning how they will go about demonstrably delivering against the different aspects of the whole ESG agenda.
Thank you. The International Integrated Reporting Council, the IIRC, is revising its framework this year. Does integrated reporting and integrated thinking have an increased relevance in this coronavirus era?
Absolutely. And it reflects what I mean by taking a stakeholder point of view rather than the traditional shareholder, primarily financially led perspective. Because obviously the IIRC framework, with its different definitions of capital, brings together and facilitates a perspective on how different stakeholders define value, whether that's an employee perspective, suppliers, communities, the environment, etc. And I think it's that breadth of perspective that is increasingly important. And the challenge for finance professionals is, how do they move out of their traditional perspective to embrace those more non-financial, less certain definitions of value? But I think there is also a gap in standard setting. And, you know, I would welcome IIRC engaging, and I'm sure it is engaging in this debate around the standards by which organizations can provide assurance to those who are using their information about much of this ESG agenda. There is a multiplicity of reporting frameworks. I think pretty much every major management consultancy and business school seems to have their own version. But until there is some form of standardization, there is a risk here that the words in companies' reports, the numbers that are reported, are not actually underpinned by tangible rigor and robustness. So I think it's a great start, but we need to move further.
Thank you. The Global Management Accounting Principles, GMAPs, were launched in 2014, and the association is currently refreshing them. How can they help management accountants lead businesses through these tough times?
Well, I have to say, I do remember the launch of the GMAP, and there's a little nice whirly gadget which came with it, which provided a useful tool, a relatively easy to use tool, diagnostic tool, that helped organizations to better understand where the opportunities lay for them to improve financial and performance management. And what it brought together again was trying to take a broader view than the purely financial. A bit of legacy on me is I've long been a fan. I trained at a time when there was a lot of background around Kaplan and Norton's book, Balanced Scorecard Approach. And a lot of the concepts there I see reflected in the GMAP that was produced back in 2014. And that's a framework which is strong in ensuring that organizational performance is forward-looking and recognizes that success is not purely a factor of finances. That said, the value of the approach, of the Balanced Scorecard Approach, became a bit limited because the associated key performance indicators, rather than becoming indicators of future performance, very much became targets in themselves and therefore were somewhat backward looking. The other thing I'd say about the GMAP tool is, you know, it was developed back in 2014 or issued in 2014 on the back of research that was carried out a year or two earlier. So it was developed before there was a real understanding of the impact of the digital age in which we're now living. As such, I do think it's time to review and refresh the tool. Again, not just thinking about that from a digital age point of view, but also thinking about that in terms of how it could be used to support business leaders as they seek to ensure they are ready for future disruption, whether that's through crisis such as COVID, which hopefully will be once in a lifetime events. But we were prior to COVID seeing, you know, new market entrants coming into new sectors of the economy and radically changing the business model. And I think we need to, as finance leaders, we need to ensure our organizations are able either to preempt such disruption or to ensure they're able to respond quickly. So for me, the new GMAP tool, as it goes through its review process, has two things it needs to be able to do. One is to help leaders understand the conditions required to enable them to be agile and fleet of foot. And the other, coming back to our earlier conversation, is that it reflects that broader stakeholder perspective, as you might see exemplified through things like the ESG framework.
Nick, thank you.
Thank you.
This podcast is designed to provide illustrative information with respect to the subject matter covered and does not represent an official opinion or position of the Association of International Certified Professional Accountants or any of its subsidiaries or affiliates. It is provided with the understanding that the association, its affiliates, and subsidiaries are not engaged in rendering legal, accounting, or other professional services. If such advice or expert assistance is required, the services of a competent professional person should be sought. The association, its subsidiaries, and affiliates make no representations, warranties, or guarantees as to and assume no responsibility for the content or application of the material contained herein, and expressly disclaim all liability for such damages arising out of the use of, reference to, or reliance on such material.